Anarchopreneur, episode number 46, How to Turn Words into Money. You're not going to want to miss this one.
Government is inefficient and should be dissolved.
What government should actually do is just leave people alone to buy and sell freely among themselves. If they just leave self-interested traders to compete with one another, markets are guided to positive outcomes as if by an invisible hand.
It's free markets that are moral because you only succeed if you meet the needs and wants of other people.
One of the hard things for people to understand is that the more you try to control an economy, the more quickly it falls apart.
Capitalism. God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
What is up, Free Market Squad, and the place to be? Thank you for taking an hour out of your day to hang with me. I am your host with the Hero Complex, Nathan Frazier. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Frazier Show. You, more importantly, you are the Free Market Squad. Welcome to the show, and thank you for letting me get up in your ear holes. Do appreciate that. We are being broadcast on Truth Frequency Radio Network, UCY.TV, LRN.FM, and of course, you can find more by heading over to NathanFrazierShow.com. And without any further ado, because I got a lot to cover today, we're just going to jump right into this week's topic, which is the power of words. So words allow us to communicate on a level that most other animals don't have. They allow us to pass information and ideas from one individual to the next, from one generation to the next. I think that we greatly undervalue the power of words. And so I'm going to be talking about that this week, both from a political and freedom standpoint and from a business standpoint. I'm going to talk about how words can have a huge impact on the political atmosphere and how words can have a huge impact on your business as well. So we're just going to jump into it, and I'm going to start by taking it in a little bit of an esoteric direction. And this might just be my conspiratorial mind at play, but I've always kind of thought of words as having like a magical nature to them, a magical property to them. Magic, it heavily relies on symbolism, and it typically the symbols have either a surface like a exoteric meaning and then an esoteric meaning, or sometimes only having the esoteric meaning. So if somebody who's uninitiated looks at like a book of spells, they'll see just a bunch of symbols that won't make any sense to them whatsoever. But if you do understand, if you are literate on the meaning of the symbols, you'll be able to understand the magic that's contained in that book. Now, do I believe in magic personally? I don't know. I tend to be skeptical, but I also try to be open-minded. Japanese culture, at least from my very surface level understanding of it from growing up being a fan of anime and manga, in Japan, the way that magic works, again, from my cursory level knowledge, is that you actually write the spell down on like a piece of paper and apply it physically to whatever you want the spell to affect. So if you want to cast a spell on an opponent, you actually write it down on a piece of paper and apply that piece of paper to the physical body of your opponent. If you want to put like a protection spell on a house, it's not just chanting the words, it's actually writing the words down or carving the words into the front door or into the one of the pillars of the front gate. So very much so, there's a lot of connections between words and magic. And even the word spelling itself, that's how you make up words, is you spell them out. And magic spells and spelling both have the same root word, which is spell. So I don't think it's just my crazy mind going. I think there is, maybe it's a reach, but I do think that there is some sort of connection between spelling and spells and all of that. And again, just like a magic book, if somebody is uninitiated to what the symbols mean, they can open up a book of magic and it doesn't make any sense. Same thing with somebody who's illiterate. They can open up a regular textbook, and if they don't understand what those symbols on the pages mean and they can't correlate them to sounds and into words, then the book is not going to make any sense to them at all. So throughout this episode, I'm going to be letting you in on a couple of different things that I think about words. And even that phrase, let you in on, it's a very powerful phrase. People just say, let me let you in on something. That right there is like saying, let me bring you in. Let me initiate you. The word in that sentence means initiate. So you're being initiated. You're being brought into the circle, to the inner circle. You're being part of the in crowd. Let me in, or let me let you in on something. So a lot of our common words, our common phrases have just these incredibly deep and profound meanings that we say, and we use these words and phrases all the time, and we don't even understand how deep the meaning of these words and phrases actually goes. We just kind of take it for granted. So I'm going to be talking about that a lot today, and to kind of continue on the theme of magic and language in general. This is something that I experienced firsthand when it came to like the legal system. The word magic, etymologically, I'm probably screwing up a lot of words in this podcast about words, and I apologize for that. But the root or the evolution of the word magic, I believe, comes from magi or mage, people that had some sort of like magical powers. The word magistrate in a court comes from the same root word. The word majesty, like your majesty, people that have some sort of magical power to rule over others. Same thing with words like magnificent or magna carta, the great charter, the great document, whatever. All of these words have the same root origin. They all have the mage or the mag in their origin. Same thing when you go into court, they want you to call the judge your honor, or they say the honorable so-and-so. These things, by making you refer to the judge as your honor, by putting the honorable before the name of the judge, it pre-frames the way that you look at this person. And this is one of those things that I don't really talk about that much, but legalese, there's like almost an entirely different language of legal definitions for words versus the everyday use of certain words. Now, I actually disagree with a lot of the theories about legalese out there. But there are some truth to some of the theories. So, one thing to understand is like in contracts or in pieces, articles of law, they define words for those sections. When you have a contract, you define your words at the beginning of the contract, and you say, every time I say this, what it means is this. And the same thing is in statutes and different types of law. When you go and research these laws at the beginning of that particular segment of writing, they'll have different definitions, and they'll say, every time we say this throughout this particular writing, what we're talking about is this. And so these words mean this in this context and throughout the entirety of this document. And I think there's a lot of the confusion comes in where people take definitions from one document or from one article, and they try to broadly apply them to every single document out there. Or you take, a Black's Law dictionary definition and you say, well, that's what Black's Law says, so every time it's ever been written in a legal document, that's what it means. Or a Bouvier's legal dictionary, every time it's been written, it means this. I don't agree with that, because like I said, you define words at the beginning of each article, and sometimes the word is defined this way, and sometimes it's defined this way. And even in Black's Law, number 3, a word might be defined one way, and in Black's Law number 7 or number 9, it's defined a completely different way. So which one is the actual definition of the word? I don't really rely on like Black's Law or Bouvier Law Dictionary to get my definitions, but a lot of people do. A lot of people look at them as the Bible, and they take those definitions and they say, this is what it means everywhere. I think that's lazy research, but that's a whole different subject. But the fact is words do have incredible power, and words are kind of like at the core of our legal system. And words like magic, magistrate, magi, those words are definitely at the core of our legal system as well. So here's an exercise for you. I'm going to list off a bunch of words, and you tell me if you can make any sense of this at all. I'm going to start right now. It, heart, missing, dog, for, is, my, leg, up, enough, but, one, more, has, make, two, than. There's a bunch of words, right? But it doesn't mean anything. But if you rearrange those words, I'm going to re-say those words, but in a different construct. My dog is missing one leg, but has more than enough heart to make up for it. Same words, but in a different order, a different combination of words. And all of a sudden it has meaning that wasn't there before. The way that you put your words, the way that you arrange your words can bring meaning out of chaos, can bring order out of chaos. Here come the accusations of Nathan being a Freemason. The right craftsman, a brilliant author can take a brilliant poet can take a combination of words and completely transform or transport you to a whole nother world. Have you ever been reading a book and just got lost in it and completely immersed in the world of the book and the rest of the world just falls away? That's what words can do. Words can take you on journeys. Words can make you feel things. Words can... words are powerful. That's basically my point. And literally, when it comes to computer coding and syntax and computer languages, you can literally build entire virtual words or worlds off of language. When you play video games or when you're doing virtual reality, all of that is just syntax. It's all just language translated into an entire virtual world. So words are powerful. Now we're witnessing this kind of rise of censorship recently. Just this last week, there's this whole fake news. Google and Facebook are cracking down on fake news. The mainstream media, who's constantly feeding us bullcrap stories about bird flu and Ebola, and they're constantly manipulating and staging crowds for events. They're just recently, I think last week, there was at a Trump protest. They interviewed one of their own cameramen and tried to make him look like a protester. They've been caught faking like satellite interviews, trying to be like pretending like these two people were talking to each other from different parking lots, but you can see the same cars going in the background. Mainstream media is completely fake, yet they're accusing sites like Truth Frequency Radio and InfoWars and other sites out there that are kind of doing a better job of bringing, again, I don't agree with everything on either one of those sites, even though I'm on one of those sites. But I feel like those type of sites, the decentralized media, I think that they're doing a better job of getting the truth out there than mainstream media is. But Google and Facebook and Twitter are labeling these sites as fake news and propping up the mainstream media, which is constantly caught lying and manipulating. They're saying that that's the real news because they're kind of, in my opinion, they're losing control of the narrative. And even that, the word narrative, you know, the word narrative denotes how powerful words are in sculpting reality. So that's where we're at. We're at a part, we're literally at a part of history where, words are starting to be censored. Speech is starting to be censored. And maybe it's been a slow boil, but we're at the point where it's starting to boil over. We're at a point where, censorship is becoming acceptable in this country, which is crazy to me. Things are being labeled as hate speech. And in my opinion, yes, you know, hate speech is a real thing. Hate speech, in my opinion, is also a protected speech. You have the right to say something hateful. You have the right to say something even erroneous or inaccurate or stupid. As long as you're not directly, you know, calling for violence against somebody, or as long as you're not making threats that you're going to carry out violence upon somebody, I feel like anything up to that point should be considered free speech. But that is not that's not the way a lot of other people are seeing things nowadays. In Canada, there's I just saw an article last week or the week before talking about how they're trying to force people to refer to others by their preferred pronouns, which is just a whole, I mean, there's like 72 different recognized genders now, and you're supposed to remember people's preferred pronouns. It's insane. Like, and it's, they're trying to make it illegal to misidentify somebody in Canada, which, I mean, that's just nuts. You should be able to say whatever you want to say. And if people are offended by it or if people disagree with it, that's fine. That's part of being free, is having the freedom to say what you want to say. Now, me personally, I really could care less on the issue. If I have a friend who is a female but wants to be called a male, I'll try to respect that. But if I make a mistake and refer to them as a female, which I probably will, because my mind works on the physical level, if they got a vagina, I'm probably going to call them a female, even if they want to identify as a male. It wouldn't be out of disrespect. It would just be out of the way my mind works. Should that be criminal? Because what my mind says is true, and that comes out of my mouth because it doesn't reflect their feelings, because my, you know, the facts that I know don't correlate with the feelings that somebody has, I should become a criminal now? That's crazy to me. It's a crazy world that we're living in. Another law that they're trying to pass is they're trying to get rid of the words mom and dad in Canada. They're trying to completely erase them from all the laws when it comes to like family court and stuff, because they don't want to be offensive. So they're trying to make it illegal to use the words mom or dad in a legal setting. Like, that's insane. We're not allowed to, we have to use certain words. We're not allowed to use other words. Like, that's the very definition of censorship. And it's kind of horrifying. It reminds me of Newspeak in 1984. Not the year, the book. They limited what words people were allowed to use. They limited and controlled what people were allowed to say. And when you limit the words that people are allowed to use, you limit the scope of the thoughts that people can have. I know personally there's been times where I was introduced to a new word and it opened up a whole new world of understanding, because an entire grasp of reality was locked off to me until somebody said this word to me. Words like sovereignty and autonomy, before I knew those words, those concepts were completely alien to me. But once somebody sat down and explained what sovereignty meant, what autonomy meant, all of a sudden I saw the entire world in a whole new light. So by cutting off what words people are allowed to say and use, you cut off how people are allowed to conceptualize reality. So it's scary. It's horrifying to me that the time that we live in where they're actually considering banning certain words. And not even that, banning entire books. Fahrenheit 451, I believe, by Ray Bradbury, I want to say. was a book all about a time where they would burn books, where the messages inside of books weren't allowed to get out there. So they would have these mass, like, book burning, I don't want to say parties, but certain books were just not allowed to be owned by people. And we're kind of seeing that tiptoe its way into culture. Books that I grew up on, like Huck Finn, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, and Of Mice and Men. Those books are now, these were like required reading when I was in high school. And now these books are banned from a lot of high schools. They're not allowed to be read in high school, which is, in my opinion, kind of crazy. And it's, most of this is coming from the left, but it's not just a problem that exists in the left. The right likes to ban books as well. When I was a kid, the reason why I considered myself a liberal, one of the biggest motivating factors for being a liberal is because the right was so anti-free speech. The right was the ones out there burning the CDs that I listened to and running them over with steamrollers. They were the ones that were attacking free speech when I was a kid. But now it's switched over. The authoritarians have become the left, and now the left has become just as bad as the right was when I was a kid. It's insane. So words are powerful. Words can completely alter political movements. Words can, and by banning words, you can silence and quash political movements. So, in a way, it's a very scary time that we live in, when it comes to, people understanding and manipulating the power of words. I want to take a second to talk about insider lingo, words that are used within certain groups of people. So I'll start off with somebody who I think is brilliant at mastering this, Michael W. Dean from the Freedom Fiends. He does a podcast called Freedom Fiends. And even in the title of the show, Freedom Fiends, it's F-E-E-N-S, but it means fiends, like people who fiend for freedom, but they say fiends instead. It's their little code word. And when I say little code word, it's not to demean it or belittle it. It's the way the word came out. Worms. They say worms typically at the end of their episodes instead of saying word, which is something that the kids said when I was a kid, word, they say worms instead. But they have code words that are words for their little group of people and for their group of listeners. Also inside of like libertarian as a whole, the libertarian umbrella, there's words like NAP, the non-aggression principle. These are like words that only mean something to us, and outsiders would hear these words and they wouldn't have anything to reference them to. They wouldn't know what we were talking about. I grew up in, I beat this horse to death, but I grew up in the hood. I grew up in very low income neighborhoods. We had a lot of code words as well. Slob was a word that we used for bloods. Crab was a word that, and I, for the longest time, I couldn't even say it. I had to say K-Rab. But crab was a word that was like a derogatory term for Crips. Buster was a word that meant somebody who used to be one gang but switched to another gang. We called them busters. Violated, when you got violated, or a violation was when you broke one of the rules of the gang. Usually got the shit beat out of you by other members of the gang. That was called a violation. Flying a kite, if you got locked up and somebody would send you a letter, that was called flying somebody a kite. So in the culture that I grew up in, we had a lot of insider words as well. Inside the sovereign citizen movement, they have a lot of insider words. They have words like A for V, which is a term for accepted for value. It's a way to use your birth certificate or your straw man identity, your Sestake trust, to write off your debts. Straw man is another word that you hear very frequently inside of the sovereign citizen movement. Even words that actually have, you know, not just code words, but words that actually have meaning, but don't aren't used very commonly outside of the group, like Sustake Trust. That's a word that most people would have no idea what that is. But inside of the sovereign citizen, inside of like legal and financial world, people might know what a Sustake Trust is. But these are words that the common people don't use, but the people inside of that little clique do use. Words that only insiders typically know about. Inside of the marketing world and the business world, we have the same thing. We have words like churn, customer churn. We have words like CTR, click-through rates, conversion, which means somebody who actually turned into a prospect or a buyer, USP, which is your unique selling proposition, CTA, the call to action at the end of a direct response ad. And the point of all of these is twofold, really. On the surface, they make it easier to communicate. Lingo and abbreviation make it easier and streamline communication, but they also create a sense of elitism. And they also help us pick out imposters and posers. If the people don't know how to use the words correctly, it lets us know that they're not part of our tribe. It allows us to quickly gauge and know how much we can trust other people who are new to us. Oh, you know these words, you're part of the tribe. When it comes to writing sales copy, you have to know your market and the language that they speak. Otherwise, your messages won't be convincing. So tiny things like the usage of a word incorrectly can completely kill a sales message. That's how powerful words can be. When we come back, we're going to get more into this on the other side. This is Anarchopreneur. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
All right. Each week, I like to shine a spotlight on one of the members of the Free Market Squad. We have something called Self-Promotion Saturdays, where people get to promote their businesses or their services or recent blog post or podcast episode that they want other people to pay attention to. And this week, I'm going to shine the spotlight on Alex Bell. That's alexgbell.com, and that's B-E-L-L. Alex is a freelance copywriter and recently wrote a blog post about how he went from working at a Waffle House to now making $50 an hour as a freelance writer. Now, this article it's an emotional roller coaster. It has a lot of ups and a lot of downs. It has a lot of trials and eventually a triumph at the end. And on top of that, it's jam-packed full of lessons that Alex has learned along the way that you can take and apply to your own situation. I thoroughly enjoyed reading this blog post. I know that you will as well. I'm going to leave it in the show notes, but if you're not able to access the show notes and you want to go check out this blog post, you can find it over at alexgbell.com/fast-food-50HR. Like I said, it's a great blog post, very inspiring, very informative. Thank you and much love, Alex, for sharing your story with us. I really appreciate it. And I know that the listeners, I know you at home listening, you will definitely get a lot out of this. So go and check out Alex's website at alexgbell.com and specifically do a search for the fast food to $50 an hour principles I've used to make it as a freelancer. It's a great article. All right. How would you like to have your business, product, service, podcast, blog post, whatever it is that you're working on, would you like to have it placed in the ear holes of my listeners? I'm sure you would. Any kind of promotion is good promotion, especially with my audience. My audience is made up of some of the most fantastic people out there. If you want to get your service, product, podcast, blog post into the ear holes of my listeners, it's really simple. All you got to do is join the Free Market Squad and take part in Self-Promotion Saturday. Free Market Squad can be found at freemarketsquad.com or by doing a search on Facebook. Just look up Free Market Squad and join and link up with a community of like-minded, liberty-loving, entrepreneurial business owners just like you. Okay, we're going to go ahead and jump right back into the show, talking all about the power of words and getting specifically into how I, just like Alex, can turn words into money. All right, here we go.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this Marge, $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handy Car's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
All right. Welcome back, Free Market Squad. This is Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Fraser Show. I am your host with a giant hero complex, Nathan Fraser. You can find more over at NathanFraserShow.com. What an egomaniac I am. We've been talking about the power of words throughout this episode. I'm going to get back into that here in a moment. We talked about how politically powerful words can be. I'm going to talk about how in business words can be very powerful as well. Before that, though, I want to take you for a little trip into a world that I like to call Nathan Fraser Land. I want to let you know what's been going on in my own life and my own business over the last week or so. So I just launched a brand new course for podcasting over at podcastblastoff.com. It's a lead magnet, which means basically it's something that I give away to people in order to get them on my mailing list. The course is kind of like an updated version of the previous course. It just basically teaches you all the things that you need to know in order to launch a successful podcast. So it's aimed at people who are brand new to podcasting because that's my ideal target market. But this one's a video-based course. It's the last one was all audio. This one's actually a video-based course. And so I want to take a moment to kind of explain what it is, what went into creating it, and what I plan on doing with it. So first of all, it's three modules, and each module has three lessons. So it's broken up. It's nine lessons broken up into three modules. The first module is all about the mindset, the mindset that you have to have in order to be a successful podcaster. The second one is all about how to structure your podcast. And then the third module is all about how to promote your podcast. The modules are delivered over a 3-day period in what's called a drip, an email drip process, where each day you get emailed one of the modules. The emails have like a link to a page that goes to a hidden page on podcastblastoff.com. On that page, you can watch the video, or you can download the slides, the PDF of the slides, or you can download the audio, the MP3. So however you want to consume it, we make it available for you. But we did add a video element to it. And the reason that we added the video element to it is because video kind of helps build authority. People are just kind of used to assuming that if somebody's in front of a camera, they're an authoritative figure. Mainstream media has kind of brainwashed people in that way. So I'm not going to fight against it. I'm gonna jump in the stream and swim with the current rather than against it. Also, video has a higher perceived value. People view video courses as being more valuable than just audio courses. So that was another reason. Also, I think the third reason is video helps build a better relationship when people actually see you talking to them. And the whole course isn't just me standing in front of, in fact, very little of the course is me in front of the camera, but the few parts where I am in front of the camera will help build that know-like trust factor with the people taking the course. At the end of the course, there's a worksheet to fill out, taking all of the lessons that you learned and applying them to the creation of your own podcast. This will really help the whoever takes the course to solidify their plan for creating their podcast. Also, the copy. Oh my gosh, so much copy went into creating this particular course. So obviously, the videos I had to. The videos were all specifically action-orientated copy. It wasn't sales copy, but it was definitely direct direct action that I wanted people to take. So there was definitely a lot of direct response in the videos. Also, the emails that the videos are, or that the course is delivered in, the emails all had to be written, and the emails have to take you on a journey from being brand new to us and our company to becoming very familiar with why we do what we do and what we offer our customers. So there was a lot of copy included in the emails. And then, of course, the landing page where we're going to send people to sign up for the course, just putting up a page and saying, give me your email and I'll send you a course. That doesn't really work. So we had to craft. When I say we, I mean me. I don't know why I'm saying we, because I'm pretty much in charge of all of that. It's all of that stuff for our company, but the landing page had to be the sales copy on the landing, or it's not even sales copy because I'm not selling anything, but the copy on the landing page had to be crafted as well. So a lot of copy has gone into creating this course. Also, going forward, I'm going to have to create some more copy as well, because we're going to be using Facebook ads to retarget website visitors. So people who have checked out our blog, or people that maybe have checked out the sales page but didn't convert into customers, I'm going to retarget those people with some Facebook ads, which means I need to come up with headlines for Facebook ads to test. I need to come up with the body content, the benefits of the course. I need to come up with all of that sales copy, and I'm probably going to come up with two or three different versions of the ad and split test them. Split testing is basically where you run three or four different ads and you just make minor changes, minor tweaks, and you test which tweak works better, which one gets more click-throughs, which one actually gets more signups. And when you have a good understanding of which ones are converting better, you take the money away from the ones that are not converting well and put it into the ones that are converting well. So still a lot more copy to write for this course, but the course itself is done. The landing page, the emails are all done. I just need to now start working on some of the Facebook advertising copy. So that's what I plan on doing for that. People that join the list by getting this free webinar, this free podcasting course, after they've gone through it, we're going to start doing a webinar on how to create a podcast website in under 30 minutes. And the webinar itself is going to be very valuable for people, whether they end up purchasing our service or not. But it's basically going to show them, you know, what they need to include in their website header, what they need to include on their About Us page, how to set up an RSS feed, why you need an RSS feed, where you should place your podcast player, how you should incorporate comments into your podcasting website, all of the things that you need to have a successful podcasting website. We're going to teach people how to incorporate all of that stuff into their podcast website. But of course, the webinar is going to be done using our software. So as they learn all of these valuable lessons about what to include in their website, they're also kind of subconsciously getting an understanding of how our software works. It'll teach the vitals of a good website, and the things that they learn can translate into if they decide to go with WordPress or build the website themselves or use one of our competitors. But it'll make them familiar with our solution. So at the end of the podcasting course and at the end of the podcast website webinar, the hope is that they'll be very warm to our solution. They'll be problem aware. They'll understand why they need a podcasting website if they decide to podcast. They'll be solution aware. They'll understand that there are ways to create websites for their podcast. And they'll be brand aware. They'll understand that we, in particular, that we have a solution that will work for them. And then at that point, the most logical choice is if they decide to go forward and start a podcast and they need a website for their podcast, we're the most logical choice. So that's kind of the goal. That's why I've put so much work into creating this it's kind of like the beginning of the marketing funnel for the BlastPod service. So that's my goal going forward. I'm super stoked about it. Just the course in general, I'm stoked about how the course came out and what it's possibly going to mean for growing our company in the very near future. I'm super stoked about that as well. So I'm super stoked, guys. All right, let's enough of Nathan Fraser land. Let's jump into the Be Your Own Boss segment of the show. And we're going to get back into the power of words. But instead of talking about the political power of words, we're going to talk about the business power of words. So people that are longtime listeners know that I'm a copywriter. People that are brand new to the show might not even know what copywriting is. Copywriting is basically the art of taking words and turning them into money. I'm a word alchemist. Instead of taking lead and turning it into gold, I take words and I turn them into money. So for the next 10 minutes or so, I'm going to be going over some rookie mistakes that a lot of people make when they first get into writing sales copy. These are mistakes that I've made. These are also some editing tricks. After you've written something, you can go back and kind of run your piece through some of these things to look out for. And so it'll improve your copywriting if you're trying to write your own sales copy. But this will also give you some things to look out for. If you're a business owner and you don't do your own sales copy, you hire somebody else to do your sales copy, this will be like a checklist of things to run their sales copy through and make sure that they're not doing these things. And if they are, it should be a big red flag that you've hired an ineffective copywriter. So without any further ado, I'm just going to jump into my list of things to make sure that you're not doing when you're writing your sales copy. And I'll probably get into some things to do instead. So first and foremost, avoid using $10 words, words with like multiple syllables. Now, I know in the beginning of the show, we were talking about how restricting people's words restricts their ability to think. We've got into 1984 in Newspeak, and now I'm advocating the exact opposite of what I said in the first half of the show. I often do that. I'm a very complex individual, and I often contradict myself. When it comes to writing copy, though, here's the deal: if somebody's reading to broaden their worldview, if somebody's reading to expand their mind, if somebody's reading to be taken on a journey to another world, that's great, right? At a higher level. But if somebody's reading to make a purchasing decision, they don't want to be challenged. They don't want to have to really do a lot of consideration. And as a salesperson, you don't want them to feel challenged. You want to make the buying decision as easy as possible for people. So when you use $10 words, when you use multi-syllabic words, I think that's the correct word. Multi-syllabic would be an example of a multi-syllabic word. When you use words with more than three syllables, when you use words that people have to go and look in a dictionary to see what you're saying, every time you do something like that in your sales copy, you're giving people an excuse to stop reading. You're giving people an excuse to quit before they get to your actual call to action at the end of the sales message. So you don't want to do that. When people are reading to make a purchasing decision, they want to feel like they understand. They want to feel like the message was clear. They want to feel like the decision that they're about to make is a clear and confident decision. And by using a lot of $10 words, yeah, it makes you sound smarter. You might say, well, I write my sales copy for CEOs. My product is for people that are college educated. It doesn't matter. When they're trying to make a buying decision, they want that decision to be as easy and clear and confident as possible. And when you riddle your sales copy with $10 words, it might make you look smart, but it doesn't instill confidence. It doesn't instill confidence in the buying decision. So make the choice at the end of the sales letter to say yes as easy as possible. Make flowing from the beginning of the sales letter to the end of the sales letter as easy as possible. Every time you throw a $10 word in there, it's like throwing a speed bump. It's like throwing... you want the slide to be greased, and it's like throwing a section of ungreased slide in the middle of it, and that slows people down. It stops people. It makes the experience bad. And it's just overall, it's not a good idea. So avoid using $10 words in your sales copy. And if you hire a copywriter to write your sales copy and their copy is riddled with $10 words, words that have more than three or four syllables in them, that is not a good sign. So keep your writing level to between a fourth and a sixth grade level whenever you're writing sales copy. And you can, this is very simple, actually. You can use tools like Microsoft Word or I like to use Hemingway app. They have an actual grade level calculator on the side. So it looks at your writing and it tells you what level of reading this is written for. So it's not as difficult as it sounds. Also, avoid using passive voice. Passive voice is basically when something is acted upon rather than doing the acting itself. So when the subject of the sentence is acted upon rather than being the actor. An example of passive voice would be like, the door was shut by me, rather than an active voice would be saying something like, I shut the door. Passive sentences are usually a lot more wordy. It takes a lot more words to say the door was shut by me than it takes to say I shut the door. Also, passive sentences are usually less clear. If I say I shut the door, everybody understands what I'm saying. If I say the door was shut by me, some people would look at you and be like, what? What does that mean? So avoid using passive sentences. Again, they're more wordy, they're less clear, and the point of copy is to instill clarity. The point of copy is to get the message across with as many words as you possibly need to, but as little words as you can possibly get away with. So copy should be clear, it should be action-invoking, and passive voice works against those goals. So avoid using passive voice if at all possible. And again, Hemingway app, I'm not a sponsor of the show. I'm not getting paid to promote Hemingway app, but maybe I should. I love their application. I paid for it. I have the actual version, but you can, the actual paid version, but you can use it for free online. Just look up Hemingway app. They also they warn you anytime that you're using passive voice. For somebody who's writing sales copy, Hemingway app is probably the number one tool out there. I use it for all of my emails, for all of my sales letters, for all of my landing pages, pretty much for everything I write, I use Hemingway app. So definitely check that out. All right, next we're going to talk about authority-robbing words. Authority-robbing words are words like intended to, designed to, could, might, if you'd like. You get to the bottom of the sales letter and when they call you to action to sign up for their mailing list, they say, if you'd like to receive our newsletter, that is not the way to do it. You don't ask them if you'd like to. You say, hey, sign up for our mailing letter or sign up for our newsletter, sign up for our mailing list. Oftentimes, especially like brand new salespeople they don't have the confidence in themselves. And so that translates onto their sales message. So they'll use words like intended to, designed, and I still am guilty of this sometimes when I'm going through my copy afterwards. One of the things that I check through as I'm editing is I look for authority robbing words and I deliberately change them on the landing page for the course that we just re-released. At the very end, it says this course was designed to give you the understanding that you need to be a successful podcaster. And I saw that and it threw up a red flag and I said, nope. Not designed to. This course will give you the knowledge that you need to be a successful podcaster. You got to do that. You have to put the confidence there. If you don't instill confidence in your copy, you won't instill confidence in your reader, and they won't be confident in the solution. And if your insecurities are about your own sales ability and it works its way into the sales copy, into the words that you use, that will be like a subtle clue to the reader that their skepticism was right. They're going into this skeptical already. And if you use words like intended to, designed to, this could do this, this might do this, if you use those type of words, or at the end of the, at the call to action, if you'd like more information, if you use words like that, you're proving their skepticism right. You're showing them, I'm not confident in this. You shouldn't be confident in it either. And if you're honestly not confident in the solution, if it's not because you're just using the wrong words, or you're projecting your own insecurity onto the product, if that's not the case, if you really aren't confident in the product itself, then you shouldn't be selling it. You should sell something else or improve whatever it is that you're trying to sell to where you actually are confident about it. Next, I want to talk about contractions. Contractions are words, there are two words put together, like I am becomes I'm, you would becomes you'd, do not becomes don't. A lot of times when we write, we want to use proper English and we want to spell out do not, or I was not. Don't do that. That's not how people talk. People say I wouldn't. People say I don't. People say I'm. So when you're writing, use contractions, because when you talk, you use contractions. And write like you talk. Don't write like a robot. Don't write like you're a lawyer from the public relations department. Write like you're a human being. And one of the tricks is to go back and read it aloud. And if you're reading it aloud and you run into a I am, and that's not the way that you would talk, it'll sound weird to you. And you'll be like, okay, I need to change that, because I wouldn't say I am, I'd say I'm. They'll sound weird. They'll sound out of place every time that you should be using a contraction rather than two different words. And in general, I always recommend just going back and reading your copy aloud. You'll find a lot of mistakes that you skipped over when you were just reading it inside of your brain. Next, I want to talk about adverbs is something totally different. Adverbs, basically words like honestly, basically, seriously, they're unneeded filler words that can often make your sales copy sound too hypey. So if somebody says, I can honestly tell you that this is seriously a great product, you don't need the honestly and the seriously in there, because I can tell you that this is a great product actually has more impact. Words like absolutely, there's absolutely no reason to use adverbs. Or there's no reason to use adverbs. Both of them have the same punch. Both of them make the same point, but one of them is done without any filler words, and it sounds less hypey. So you go through and check to make sure you're not overusing adverbs as well. Plus, they just take up space, and when you're paying per word or per inch on a piece of paper, you really want to kind of whittle out all of the adverbs. Also, that, the word that, people use the word that so frequently when it's not needed. It's a huge filler word for when people write. I do this all the time. 9 times out of 10, if you're using the word that, the sentence that you're using it in will make perfect sense even if you take the word that out of it. So an example of what I'm talking about would be, I knew that this sentence had unneeded words versus I knew this sentence had unneeded words. The same message is conveyed, the same impact happens whether the word that is in there or not. So I go through and I try to get rid of every that, or every, I go through my copy and I find every instance of the word that, and I ask myself, is this really needed for this sentence? And if it's not, out of here. A great way to do this actually is when you're writing, just Command F or Control F if you're on a PC, and then it'll pop up a little find function on whatever you're using to type on, and you just type in the word that, THAT, and then it'll show every single instance of the word that, and you'll see a lot of them, I guarantee. I consciously try to avoid it while writing, and I still find a bunch of them after I'm done writing. And then you can just go through case by case, go through each, instance of the word that. And like I said, if it doesn't need to be in the sentence, if the sentence makes perfectly fine or perfectly, there I go using an adverb that I didn't need to use. If the sentence makes perfect sense without the word that in there, then just get rid of the word that. Again, the point of really effective copy is to make the argument with as little words as possible, but using as many words as necessary. So, I probably a little bit too much hard teaching on this episode, but I really wanted to show how powerful words can be. Words can build a business. Words can build an empire. Words can build entire worlds. That's how powerful words are. And we should have access to as many words as possible, as many concepts as possible. We should have access to all of that. But at the same time, we should be very careful in picking and choosing what words we use ourselves. Not picking and choosing what other words other people can use, but definitely exercise control over what words you use yourself. Because the way that you pick and choose your words, the words that you pick and choose to use, can define not only your reality and the reality of those around you, but it can define your success in life, and it can define the success of a society at large. So thank you for tuning in. I really appreciate you spending the last hour of your day with me. I hope that I made it well worth your time. If you want to check out more, you can always go find my podcast, more episodes of this here podcast, over at NathanFraserShow.com. If you're interested in starting a podcast of your own and you want to take the course that I was talking about earlier, not even that. If you're interested, then you need to go to that landing page at podcastblastoff.com/course, sign up for that course, give yourself the competitive edge that you need in order to succeed in the world of podcasting. Podcasting is all about words, using words to change the world, to make the world a better place. And I hope today that I use my words to help improve your world, even if just a little bit. I'm Nathan Fraser. I love you, Free Market Squad. I'm out of here. Faith in each other, not in authority. Be your own boss. Deuces.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. You like listening to podcasts, don't you? Have you ever thought about starting a podcast of your own? If you're a hardcore podcast fan, you probably have, and you've probably got something great to share with the world. I'm Nathan Fraser, and I've created a free online podcasting course for people just like you. Pre-Launch Secrets gives you the top 5 secrets you need to know in order to launch a successful podcast. You'll learn how to create the core concept of your podcast, how to build a solid audience, and how to consistently generate great content for that audience. These are the secrets the pros use when coming up with ideas for their podcasts. And after this course, you'll have them all at your disposal. The course is free. It's taught by me. Enroll today. Go to podcastblastoff.com/course. That's podcastblastoff.com/course. Podcast Blastoff, the future of podcasting.